Alrighty, folks, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm-Up Sessions podcast. Here we are once again, every weekend here, with the exception of a few that are not possible. But yeah, let's pour some batchy.
There it is.
It's pretty good,
pretty tasty.
Yeah, actually, well, actually, it came out much better than I was expecting. Actually,
Kind of reminds me of the Jorge Mendez.
It does. This just has a little more. Once again, I think we actually said this on the last podcast, but like, I feel like depending on origin and processing and flavor, stone fruit can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah,
like African stone fruit is not gonna taste the same as like Indonesian. And so yeah, like I think this does taste like the Jorge Mendez, but I think that stone fruit is a little different in this one.
It's also it tastes slightly darker, quite a bit darker.
Dude, it's wow. This tastes better than all the pour overs that I've had.
Wow, that's wild.
Maybe I was drinking it too fresh, because I haven't cracked and opened. I haven't brewed this coffee in like a week, if not more. So,
dude, I love that they roasted fresh daily.
I mean, they literally do.
I'm not wrong. I'm not laughing. They're not wrong. It's honest. It's an honest quote right there. Man, fabulous.
Yeah, wow. Well, I made a mistake last time, but this time, no mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Colombian from a local roaster called Woods Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Dude, I love Woods to submit to a cupping.
Honestly, their SO probably would slap really well. Actually, I bet it would score well. It would do well, so... No complaints, dude. Oh man, it's so juicy.
It's good.
As it cools, it's so juicy. It has
a lot of sweetness.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
Yeah,
mouth watering. Dude, whatever you did on the grind size, I mean, this is as dialed as can be. I don't know if you can get more dialed than this.
I didn't change anything. Whatever you left last time.
Whatever left on my filter.
No, I think it was like. It's like 11.
Oh, dude, that's where I was bringing the Ethiopia.
Nice. Nice. Well, I like it.
Yeah. Well, we did just come back from, well, yesterday we went to a cupping with the narrative team. If you've listened to the podcast a little bit, we've mentioned a little bit of their process, but they choose coffees. What they're going to serve, they cup them quarterly, and they do a blind cupping, a blind evaluation, and they have their own unique scoring, how they score and evaluate coffees, and then the two best performing roasters will then move on to be served at the cafe for that quarter. So it's a very interesting and cool process. If you haven't listened to the podcast that we did with Maxwell Mooney, he's the owner of Narrative, go back into the archives, give it a listen. It's a really stellar podcast. I love chatting with him. He had some really good, insightful things to say. Yeah. So, but yeah, what we just did that last night and it was like the evening, in a nutshell, what'd you think?
I love the process.
I'm just going to preface this. Yeah. We're talking like back to back, 14, 15 roasters, each roaster submitting three, most of the time four, sometimes five. So if you do the math on that, what is that? Let's say 14 times four coffees. We're doing 60 coffees just back to back. So I thought that was very important to, yeah, for sure. to state. Yeah. But anyways.
And I think that's, for me, one of the most intriguing, awesome things that I love about narrative is the fact that there's a meticulous, basically, plan on how to choose coffees. I think that's my favorite part, like, hands down. The fact that that happens, and the fact that that's a cupping that, in a sense, I can be part of and enjoy, but also be able to taste a bunch of coffees that I probably wouldn't have even bought. That was one thing. And then to also taste them with no bag, no preconceived idea, no label. Like, there's no label on the cupping that says this is the roaster. There's just a number. So it's as blind as blind can get. And even made me nervous at how blind it was, because I was afraid of mixing up the beans. Like, it's blind. And it's also different doing that in the cafe, and also the environment with the people that you're there. Because you and I blind cup coffees all the time here in the office. Mm-hmm. And especially, we even blind cup our production roasts. Mm-hmm. But the experience with that is so much more different than what we did last night.
Yep.
Yeah. And I enjoy both. That's my point. Yeah.
For sure. And I think, say that, like, sometimes when we're blind cupping our production roasts, which I think we did that just this week, mm-hmm. where we also threw other roasters onto the table amongst our coffees, yeah. completely blind as well, just labeling the underneath the bowl. You just put a little marking identifier under there. And I think it's extremely helpful, especially when you can take your own production roasts and match them, you know, alongside other roasters that yeah. maybe are kind of in your playing field, or people you aspire to roast like, or whatever yeah. it is.
Yeah.
I think it's extremely important, because, I mean, from our cupping, I think we walked away with a lot of really great takeaways.
Yeah.
It just fine tunes you, and it really works on your palate and how you're tasting things. And I think, you know, if you're listening to this, whether you're a roaster, and we say this all the time, whether you're a roaster, I don't know, even a barista, mm-hmm. A home barista as well, anybody, like, blind cup some of the coffees that you have. I know you home baristas have like 20 different packs of coffee in your freezer. You know, take all 20 out, throw them in some cupping bowls, and give it a whirl. But that was a very different, you know, unique experience at Narrative, to be cupping, you know, a total of 60 coffees yeah. from some really extraordinary roasters.
Yeah.
And I don't know. What do you think? What stood out to you, apart from the process itself,
yeah.
this time? What's maybe something that you learned from this experience, mm-hmm. whether that's as a roaster, maybe as a barista even?
Yeah. The obvious thing is there's a lot of good coffee out there. That was just
yeah.
fairly obvious, especially in this cupping, all 14 roasters submitting, like, there's just a lot of good coffees and a lot of also similarities, like, within that. Mm-hmm. I feel like folks are starting to roast a little more similar than they were back in the day. And even like a year ago, there would be a few. I remember one certain cupping that we did where there was such a wide range of, like, really, I hate using the word bad, but coffees I did not like, a lot of coffees I did not like, and then a lot of coffees that were just, like, out of this, or a few coffees that were out of this world. So it felt like the gap was bigger. In this cupping, I would say the gap was definitely smaller. It was a little more competitive. Definitely, I could pick out some coffees that I'm like, okay, these don't fit. Also, for me, cupping in this setting was also different, because I also work for Narrative. So I kind of have an understanding of the coffees that we like and we serve. Mm-hmm. And I have a kind of a plumb line defined of, like, what certain elements in the roast that we prefer taste like, or, you know, the classic, what does green coffee taste like, mm-hmm. and what does over roasted, like, overdeveloped coffee taste like, stuff like that. So I kind of had an idea already, like, ooh, this is kind of up our alley. But still, with all of that said, it was a tough match. That's for sure.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And you know, I really enjoyed the fact that there were roasters out there that I've never heard of,
right?
That were on the table that I actually enjoyed. And I was like, okay, you know, you're doing something.
Yeah.
And it's always fun to, you know, to see roasters that you've just never heard of do like a really stellar job. And that means that there's just so much more out there that you can discover,
mm-hmm.
that you can, they can drink and explore and know of. So, that was awesome. But yeah, I think for me, it was a really great learning experience to be able to not only taste a bunch of really great coffees, but also realizing that, I mean, I'm still balancing the fact of like, what's preference and what's objectively and subjectively good.
Yeah.
Even what you just said, where you're like, I don't know if I'd call that bad. And you know, I'd probably be a little bit more quick to say like, yeah, that's just bad. Yeah. But at the same time, it is challenging because, your preference might not be my preference. And like, there was a couple of times where Max scored a coffee that was, he's like, oh yeah, this is actually pretty good. And I'm like, gosh, that is not good. Like, I don't know if I'd score it that high. And I don't know, does that make me wrong or does that make him wrong? Or, but yeah, it was a huge learning experience also for me to also try to find our coffees actually also in the midst. Yeah,
for sure.
And then I mean, it was actually like, we're nearing the end and I'm like, I don't know. There was a couple times where I was like, coffee's, you know, somewhere in there. And I actually enjoyed the way our coffees cupped on that table. Like all of them were like pretty satisfactory for me.
Mm-hmm. Like you and I had a quick little chat when we cupped our fourth coffee, which was the decaf.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, that's it. Because I was super familiar with the flavor of that coffee. And I drink the decaf probably more than you. Yeah. I drink it at home. And I pull out an espresso at home. Like I drink it many different ways. So I enjoy that coffee a lot. And therefore, like for me, it sticks out. In the same way, there are times when you and I have had Manhattan coffees. They, by the way, didn't submit.
Yeah.
So everyone knows. But when Manhattan's coffees are on the table, there's something about them where we always recognize either the mouthfeel or significant flavors. So I think actually that's a very positive thing. That's a positive thing about the more you cup, the more you start to pick up on those nuances, the more you're not only identifying flavors, you're identifying roasters. Even before we got there, Nate, you know, threw that little trick and brewed a cup of coffee and said, hey, what does this taste like? That was awesome. I think those things are important, and that's why I would continue to encourage people continue to cup coffees and tasting coffees so you develop that muscle memory.
So yeah, I think that plays a lot into just tasting coffees blindly apart from packaging, you know, whether that's, you know, have your buddy come over, you know, another maybe like coffee enthusiast friend or whatever, if you're a home barista, let them come over and like, just brew up a coffee blindly and try to guess where it is and who it was roasted by, mm-hmm. or who it was roasted by might be crazy, but you know, like origin, processing, flavor profile, and just to match, just to grow and learn. And it's okay to be wrong in those places. Like, although like you and I got very close when Nate tested us both on like a pour over,
exactly.
But it was still frustrating. But then at the same time, I'm like, well, that's actually not too bad. Probably not as good as like a wine sommelier, like knowing which side of the river the wine was grown on or whatever.
I mean, I honestly don't know how many coffees from Ecuador I've had.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. You know, so I've never had that specific coffee.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like the blind cupping aspect a lot. And I think the other side of the fact is because we weren't cupping it in this like strict, almost like lab kind of scenario. Mm-hmm. There was some dialogue going on.
Yes.
And I enjoyed listening to that banter too, because we got to just hear different opinions, hear different perceptions, and also be able to like not only for me, it's like a aligning thing, but also to be like, oh, I never thought about this. There's a few comments that I heard that were made mm-hmm. that made me think about, you know, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Or my comment when I said something tasted like mold, and it technically probably wasn't mold. It's just what it does to my perception of like how I understand that flavor reminded me of that.
Yeah.
So therefore it was good to hear something different that did not align with what I would automatically define as a certain flavor.
Just learning to see what other people are seeing when they're cupping. And I know that takes a lot to calibrate with somebody. That takes a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what you should be doing with, if you're a roaster, you should be calibrating with your green coffee importers, exporters, who you're buying green coffee from, other people on your team, mm-hmm. Us calibrating, you know, if you have a cafe, then calibrating with your baristas or whatever that is. That's really important. But yeah, just hearing about like, man, what's Max or picking up? What good is he tasting in that? Completely didn't think was good. Also, another thing. There was a few times where there was like one or two other roasters that had very similar like flavor profiles that caught my attention. And that was also like a really good thing to pick up on, is because you're training yourself what you like and what you don't like from another roaster. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of value in that. That helps, you know, whether you're buying coffee for yourself, that helps you dial in also your roasting approach. Mm-hmm. That was extremely helpful and fun.
Yeah, and also I think from a green coffee sourcing perspective, whenever a coffee from El Parejo or any Bermuda's coffees that's on the table, whether it's roasted by Manhattan or someone else, it really piques my interest, because I'm like, am I picking up on how well Manhattan is roasting the coffee, or am I just picking out on like outstanding green coffee? Which it's definitely both, you know. I think Manhattan does a great job in roasting, but I also think Diego's coffees are exceptional. Yes. So when I see someone else serve El Parejo, it's always interesting for me. Like, I remember I was setting up part of the cupping, and I saw a few of those bags, and I'm like, man, I wonder if I'll pick that up. I don't remember if I did. I don't remember exactly all the results. I didn't write everything down. But that to me is super exciting. And then on top of that, the fact that we can go into this cupping, we can try all these coffees, and not only recognize origin, but recognize producer in the cupping, and recognize certain different sourced green coffees on top of the roasting, to me, that's always exciting. Like, I'm just having a ball when I'm like, I know the producer of that coffee because of the taste.
You mentioning green just made me realize, like, man, it is such an interesting balance of, you need to buy really amazing green. We've said this before. You can't make a coffee any better than what it was when it came to you, right, to the roastery. Like, you can't increase the point value of it. You can only maximize its potential of what was already in there when it got to the roastery. But then also realizing, like, not only does your green have to be tasty, but you also have to roast really well. Like, this is an A and B together. Like, you can take a Diego coffee and make it taste pretty bad. Like, you can do that. Totally. You know, that is not out of reach. You can make it taste really vegetal. You can make it taste really roasty, dark, not really great. But then also the other thing that was like threw me a wrench in the cupping that made me thinking is that it's not just always about how do you source the top five green in the world, say. There's a lot of benefit and value in sourcing not just always the top, but sourcing solid green, but doing such a good job on the roasting that is like, oh, wow, you were able to pull something beautiful out of that coffee.
Yeah.
Even though it's not the COE, even though it's not the Geisha, the Sidra, the SL28, whatever you want to call it now, that is the next cool thing that's popping off. But what about, you know, solid coffee. You did an exceptional job roasting, mm-hmm. and now you're presenting it. And at the end of the day, what do you get? Wow, this is very pleasing and fun and just nice to drink.
Yeah. And if you're like a barista in a cafe, being able to have a diverse menu is super important too. Like, you don't want to be just serving naturals that taste like blueberries, you know? Right. And we always talk about, like, a daily driver for us is usually like a guat that just solid, has everything you want in a coffee, acidity, sweetness, balance. Like, that's what we're looking for. And I think a lot of the times those coffees don't get all the Instagram posts. Like, those coffees, I mean, we post about Jorge Mendes a lot, but I'm saying in general,
like, shout out to him.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, a lot of the times it's usually a very bonkers coffee that gets all the fame and all the glamour of being this exceptional coffee. Mm-hmm. But the daily drivers, you know, the classic coffees that we enjoy that are roasted really well.
Yes.
And all of the goodies are revealed properly.
Yes.
In balance. I mean, I don't know what's more famous than a daily driver like that, right? Because 100%. It's great to have a pour over of a wild coffee.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many of those you're going to keep sipping on, right?
100%. I really enjoyed, you know, after the cupping, we're just reevaluating our coffees, getting feedback and some critique, some direction, stuff like that. And when he just brewed up the Jorge Mendes, I mean, that was a killer brew. That was so dialed. I loved it.
Yeah.
But sipping on it, I was like, okay. Like, just that, like, you know, that, like, realization, like, man, like, just a really solid coffee. Maybe my preference swings, like a pendulum almost. Yeah.
I was thinking
sometimes one, you know, I'm in these seasons where I'm like, man, I'm looking through like geisha offering lists. Yeah. Like I'm looking for the most craziest, wildest thing. And then maybe I'm just in that back where I'm just like, not that I want a bad coffee. It's more like, I'm like, how do I say this? Even like, I'm not looking for a flashy label.
Yeah.
But what I really want is like a really well roasted coffee.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to say that we're perfect at everything, but sometimes that's way more impressive than anything else. And I think sometimes it's very difficult actually to come across. Like, and that's a personal preference. Yeah. I'm speaking, like, not to say that, you know, everybody should agree with me, but mm-hmm. that to me, that makes my day.
I mean, that's why we talk about how much we like wash coffees.
Yeah.
For that very reason, you know. Again, like, I am speaking from a very unique place, a very privileged place where I have the opportunity to cup 56, 60 coffees.
Yeah.
You know, that's not everyone gets that opportunity.
For sure.
So, and then on top of that, like, if you go in the morning on bar, I get to serve a lot of different coffees. Mm-hmm. So with all of that said, like, I still love a geisha. You know, I still have a lot of these wild coffees at home chilling on my bar. Like, last time you and I talked, I think I had like, you know, 6 or 7 bags, and I gave a bag of the geisha away to a friend of mine.
Yeah.
I love those coffees. I sip them. I have some wild naturals. That Ethiopia natural from Bold Bean that I have at home.
Yeah.
That is absolutely bonkers. Like, I like coffees like that. I don't mind them. But I do feel like a properly well-roasted, a dialed roast of a classic coffee that has a little bit of everything is so nice. And I do think a lot of the times they're just underrated.
I think it even feels to a certain extent wrong to say those classic or those basic coffees. They're not basic. They're not classic. Yeah. They're not. There's nothing bad about them, because when they're roasted really, really well, everything that needs to be shown, it shines.
Yeah.
Like, there was a part in the cupping where I was like, just trying to figure out, like, Max, I even asking, like, what's acidity?
Yeah.
Like, cause I was like, wait a second, we need to define some terms. So we're playing off of the same things. And there was a moment where he's like, hey, I'm not scoring according to, you know, I think I might butcher this, but according to like the most insane quality or too specific, his preference, he said it's more about how the roaster, what the roaster did with what the coffee had to offer. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was like, that was a very like clicking light bulb moment where I was like, interesting. That put into words stuff that I felt and that I've enjoyed that I haven't been able to put into words that way. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I'm like, oh, that's why I actually rave. That's why I actually really like the Jorge Mendez and I actually rave about it.
Yeah.
Not because it's a geisha, not because it's a 90.
Yeah.
It's because it's just like, it's just, you know, in my opinion, I think like when you roast it really well, there's, it's pleasantly complex, sweet, great, amazing, and you just get to freaking enjoy it. I mean, that's why we drink coffee too. So
yeah, good stuff. Love it.
Alrighty, folks, that is it for this weekend. Yeah. This week's Coffee Roaster Warm Sessions podcast. Thank you so much for joining us once again, and thank you for listening. Have a great weekend, and as always, as we always say, reflect what's good.